This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ashley was a wild and funny Texan who everyone seemed to love.
Caring, loving, compassionate.
So why did she have this strange premonition?
Ashley always felt like she was going to die young.
The call came on Black Friday.
She said that Ashley's apartment's on fire.
When the coroner pulled up, my heart broke.
And this fire was no accident.
They had conducted surveillance at Ashley's apartment.
They're going back to the place where Ashley worked.
Yes, sir.
They were going after tens of thousands of dollars.
But was money the only motive? Or was there something else?
There were a lot of rumors going around that ended up being true.
Couldn't believe that somebody could do that to her. Just pure evil.
I'm Lester Holt, and this is Dateline. Here's Keith Morrison with Black Friday.
A hot August night in Texas, 2014. The loan figure knew where to go, knew where the store kept the cash, grabbed $18,000, and was gone. But it was only money, and no one got hurt. Not that time, anyway. The story begins here in Fort Worth, Texas, which turned out to be the perfect growing up place for a rough and tumble free spirit named Ashley Harris.
I was around 10 when she was born, and so the perfect age to pretend she was my baby.
Melissa Hill is Ashley's eldest sister.
She marched to a beat of a different drum. She would wear just things that did not match. Her hair was just, didn't seem combed, you know.
But she was never the little princess type.
No, no.
There were three girls in the family. Ashley was the baby. Their mom, Monica, remembers how Ashley loved sports and music and art and bingo.
It was our mom and daughter bonding time, and she'd just get all giddy and excited.
By the time she got to high school, Ashley had lots of friends, even a boyfriend. And she was devoted to her two dads, her father Tommy and her stepfather Chuck, both retired police officers.
Didn't she talk at one point about getting into actually your line of work?
She was interested in policing. I think that she took unique interest in it.
But after high school, she ended up working for a short time at Blockbuster Video. And that's where she met a customer named Laura Love.
And I walked around the store for a little bit and just kept looking at her because she was so beautiful.
Laura wanted to meet the girl behind the counter. They became friends. And then something more.
We hung out for a few months, for like 8 months, before it ever really got there.
By that, she means she and Ashley fell in love.
It was a lot of growing up. She had to work through her feelings. Being gay isn't necessarily an easy thing, and it definitely wasn't easy 14, 15 years ago.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Was there a coming out period during which she sort of...
I believe it was 2004. She came over to the house, and she goes, "Mama, I got something to tell you." And Chuck, "I just wanted you to know that I was gay." And I said, "Well, Ashley, I already knew it, but you need to give me some space. I need some time."
So Monica took some time, prayed about it, came to this conclusion.
"I can't imagine God giving me this child and living with her and raising her that he would want me to stop loving her."
Wouldn't make any sense at all.
Yet, for a long while, Monica wasn't comfortable with Ashley's new relationship, though Laura said she and Ashley were good together.
She was just always very giving and very, "What else can I do for you to make you happy?"
The romance lasted more than 3 years, and then it was over. But they remained friends, and Laura remembers how happy Ashley was when she started working at American Eagle Outfitters at the Hewlin Mall in Fort Worth.
Oh, she loved it.
She was an assistant manager and good at it, said her boss, Chris Cravey.
Just her personality, caring, loving, compassionate. She just loved life.
Yeah.
And she loved taking videos of her life, lots of them at work.
I'm extremely tired, and this right here is not even helping. Look at my eyes. It's horrible.
She had this laugh. It was so infectious.
They weren't all like that, however. Employee Lindsay Green said another assistant manager, Carter, was very different from Ashley.
She taught me how to love myself to a point. Carter just taught me work-related things.
Not a jokester.
Right.
But Ashley, polar opposite and popular.
This is what cold looks like. I'm so hood.
So work was going well. Her love life? Not so much. And then one night, Ashley went out with friends, and April Moffat was there.
And I was their waitress, and she was having a bad night, and I was trying to pull her out of her shell. She wasn't having it, so I just, fine.
April gave up on her grumpy customer. Until months later, they connected on social media. They met for a dog walk. Ashley brought her dog, Nala. April brought Cooper. And everyone clicked.
What was it like when you first started going out with her?
She has a magnetic, force to her. Like, it's hard to not instantly love her.
So by the summer of 2014, life was good for Ashley. Her social life, her job. Though she did hit a bump of sorts in August when someone stole $18,000 from the store safe.
And it was Ashley who realized the theft had occurred and reported it to you.
Correct.
She even helped ID the suspect. With her interest in police work, Ashley thought she might have a calling here.
She wanted to go on to loss prevention and work for our home office at American Eagle.
She was 31. She had all kinds of plans. But on the morning after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year, Chris Cravey's phone rang at home.
It was our other assistant manager saying, Chris, Ashley's apartment's on fire and we can't get her on the phone. I threw clothes on as fast as I could get, started driving to Fort Worth, and followed the smoke trail and the sirens.
Coming up, no one would have guessed where that trail would eventually lead.
We were asking if we could talk to Ashley or where she was at. They just said that she's unavailable right now.
And Ashley's friends weren't the only ones with questions.
The police start shuffling us into the office.
It was the morning after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. Laura Love had only one thing on her mind.
Black Friday was my favorite day of the year. I love to shop and save money.
But Laura's Black Friday was about to turn very dark indeed.
I got a call from a friend of ours, and she said Ashley's apartment's on fire.
Ashley's friends arrived at her apartment parking lot to something like chaos.
There was multiple police cars. Crime scene was there.
Fort Worth Detective Jerry Cedillo and his partner Ernie Pate sped over there, too.
There was a crowd that was starting to gather. Next thing you know, we have about 40 to 50 friends and family and coworkers. And then we had residents that were just, looking from balconies, so we had quite a crowd out here.
By now, firefighters had squelched the flames, and the detectives walked up the steps to Ashley's door.
When you went into that apartment, what was that like?
It was very disturbing.
A woman's lifeless body was lying face down on the bedroom floor.
We waited until she was turned over and we got a good look at her face, and she was also identified by some of the tattoos.
And then they knew. The victim had her name tattooed on her rib cage, Ashley Harris. Outside, Ashley's friends were totally in the dark.
We were asking if we could talk to Ashley or where she was at, they just said that she's unavailable right now.
Ashley's boss, Chris Cravey, had just arrived and was trying to get some answers.
For a couple hours, we just assumed that she was being taken care of.
And while they waited for information, investigators were realizing this was no accident.
It was obvious that she had been beaten due to the amount of blood that we found. And then we observed that her arms were bound behind her back and her ankles were also bound.
It looked, said the detectives, like Ashley had been fighting back against a truly vicious attack.
She had been beaten and possibly tortured. We later discovered that her neck had been slit.
Not only that, the fire looked suspicious. So, veteran arson investigator Wallace Hood was called to the scene.
Now I noticed that there was fire damage on the bed, and I also noticed that there was some fire damage to the victim, and I also saw what looked like a bottle of alcohol.
Fire damage actually on the victim, so like somebody set fire to her.
It looked like there was some burn marks on her.
What did you ultimately determine about the fire and how it got started?
There were several points of origin, and that's an indicator of intentionally set fire.
Sure. So somebody took that rubbing alcohol, poured it here, poured it over there, poured it here.
Yes, sir.
Chris Cravey, standing in the crowd outside, watched his worst fears roll up in front of Ashley's apartment.
I think it hit me like a sack of bricks once I saw them start taping it off for a crime scene. And when the coroner pulled up, my heart broke. I lost it.
And then the detectives, looking very stern, came outside to ask some pointed questions. Did someone know something? See something?
At that point, the police start shuffling us into the office. And they tell us that even if we try to leave, we could be arrested.
I mean, that told you something very bad happened in there.
Yeah.
One person not in the crowd that morning was Ashley's girlfriend, April Moffitt. About 1 p.m., April got a text from one of Ashley's neighbors.
Hey, have you checked on your girl? There was a fire in her apartment. And immediately, I thought, Nala, Ashley's dog.
April assumed Ashley wasn't at home.
I was like, holy crap.
And then she got a message from another friend saying simply, call me.
And I called her and I said, where is Ashley? Where's Nala? And she was like, Nala's fine. And I was like, well, where is Ashley? And she was like, Ashley's gone. And it didn't register.
Yeah, like gone. What do you mean gone?
Yeah. And then I said, well, is Ashley okay? She said, no, April, she's dead. And I was sitting on my bed and I threw my phone on the ground. Like, that's not real.
When reality settled in, April and all of Ashley's family and friends and even the police had to wonder, who would do such a thing to such a good, sweet person? Ashley Harris had no enemies. Did she?
Coming up.
So you're out here on the deck having a cigarette. What'd you see?
I saw a vehicle parked there that I'd never seen before.
But someone had seen it before.
I said, I know whose car y'all are asking about.
When Dateline continues.
It was almost the perfect crime. Everyone was distracted, their attention elsewhere. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that could bring out everyone's most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play throughout your day, anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties. Bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vaults. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Thank you.
Ashley's mother and stepfather were out of town when the news began arriving in awful, jagged bits. First, they heard about the fire, and Monica prayed Ashley wasn't hurt. And then Ashley's father, Tommy Harris, called.
I saw Chuck getting off the phone, and I saw him wiping his tears. And I knew that my prayer wasn't answered.
Chuck couldn't reach Ashley's sister, so he left a message.
And not 2 minutes later, my husband called me. And he said, "Where are you? I need to come to you." And I said, "What is wrong with my mom? What happened to my mom?" And he said, "It's not your mom. It's Ashley." And I mean, it just comes like a blow.
Back in Fort Worth, police were still rounding up people gathered outside Ashley's apartment. Not among them was April. April, in fact, hadn't seen Ashley for a few days. Their romance had hit a bit of a bump.
That night, we talked briefly about me coming over after I got off work. But then I went home.
But someone else was there. Her name was Alexis Torres.
Alexis Torres was the last person to see Ashley alive and was the actual last person to leave her apartment.
That is certainly somebody you'd want to talk to.
Obviously, yes, sir.
Alexis said she and Ashley had gone to an early Thanksgiving dinner with friends in Ashley's complex.
So you had Thanksgiving dinner, and that was...
I think it was around 12.
Sure. And then hung around for the afternoon.
Yes.
But Ashley had to work that night.
So Ashley's shift was supposed to be from 7 p.m. until 3 a.m. And Alexis agreed to come over during the time that she was working to basically take care of Ashley's dog.
Then Alexis told the police, and later us, that she went back one more time after Ashley got home for work.
How long did you stay?
I stayed for an hour.
That would make it 4 a.m. If Alexis was telling the truth, the police had the beginnings of a timeline. But before they could check her story, or anyone else's for that matter, a neighbor gave them more to work with. An ex-cop named Steve Lee had noticed something about 6:30 that morning.
So you're out here on deck having a cigarette. What'd you see?
I saw a vehicle parked there that I'd never seen before.
What was that vehicle?
It was a black older Infiniti sedan.
Back over here, to the observant ex-cop, that seemed worth noting.
Did it stay there for a long time?
It was there when I left for work at about 7:40.
Detectives also talked to a neighbor who lived directly below Ashley. He had heard noises, heavy breathing, coming from Ashley's apartment just before 8 a.m.
A few minutes later, the fire alarm started going off. Water started coming down into his apartment.
And that's when the neighbors saw a black Infiniti G35 driving away. Armed with this new information, Sadio went back to Alexis Torres.
I asked her if she knew anyone or if Ashley knew anyone that drove a Infiniti G35. I never gave her a color. I simply asked her about a G35.
Alexis said, no.
And after he was done asking me questions, I walked outside and sat down on the brick. And I believe it was Chris that was there.
That would be Chris Cravey, Ashley's boss at American Eagle. Alexis told him that police were asking about an Infiniti sedan, and Chris made a beeline for Detective Cedillo.
I approached him and I said, "I know whose car y'all are asking about."
And he says, "I just want to make you aware that I have a former employee that did drive a Infiniti G35.
Her name, he said, was Carter. Carter Cervantes. That business-like assistant manager who worked with Ashley.
So then I asked him, what color is the GN35 that she drove? And he mentions that it's a black one.
What was that like to hear that?
Well, beats hearing the color red or white.
And by the way, Chris told Detective Cedillo, Carter left American Eagle because she was fired. Cedillo filed that away and sorted through the crime scene and talked to witnesses. And the day that began at 8:30 that morning didn't end until 1 a.m.
Did you get any sleep?
No, sir, I didn't.
The story about Carter Cervantes and her black Infiniti was just bugging him.
Well, I'm thinking about the case, and I'm thinking, where do I go from here?
Might have tossed and turned all night thinking about that. But something inside him said, nope.
I'm not going to be able to get any sleep. I might as well go back out there and see what I can find.
Wouldn't be his first wild goose chase. He had Carter's address, so wee hours of Saturday morning, he drove over there, and what do you know?
I saw a black Infiniti backed in right in front of their apartment.
But he didn't knock on her door.
I was going to go ahead and basically sit here and watch the vehicle to see if it moved.
For more than 4 hours, he sat in his car, cold but patient. And then about 8 a.m. Saturday, he saw the lights of the Infiniti flash as if somebody was unlocking it remotely.
I see the male enter the driver's seat of the vehicle. I then see a female enter the passenger side of the black Infiniti.
They drove off. The detective followed. And after a few minutes, the Infiniti pulled into, of all places, the Hewlin Mall.
So there they are. They're going back to the place where Ashley worked, where the American Eagle was.
Yes, sir.
But what would they be doing there?
Well, that was the million-dollar question.
Coming up.
I asked him, what are you doing here at the mall? He said that he had dropped his girlfriend off to pick up some papers.
A routine errand or something else?
You didn't see her at all in there?
No, sir.
Did anybody see her?
No, sir.
On the Saturday morning after Black Friday, 2014, Homicide Detective Jerry Cedillo followed a black Infiniti into the parking lot of the Hewlin Mall. He watched as the passenger, a woman dressed in darkest clothes, headed inside. She fit the description he'd be given of 25-year-old Carter Cervantes, a former co-worker of Ashley Harris. The male driver stayed in the car. So Cedillo called his partner, Ernie Pate, asked him to check up on the guy.
And when I approached the car, then the person identified themselves as David Mallory.
David Mallory was Carter's live-in boyfriend. He, too, was a former employee of American Eagle.
I asked him, what are you doing here at the mall? He said that he had dropped his girlfriend off to pick up some papers at Aeropostale, where she was a manager.
So perhaps it was just that, David giving Carter a ride to pick up some paperwork at her new job at Aeropostale. Cedillo decided to go inside. The mall was open, but the stores were still closed.
And I happened to go up to Aeropostale, and there is a manager that's actually in there working, and I was able to confirm that Carter Cervantes did not work for him, and he doesn't even know who she is.
Well, so much for that story.
Yes, sir.
Cedillo turned his attention to finding Carter Cervantes. No luck.
You didn't see her at all in there?
No, sir.
Did anybody see her?
No, sir.
So, Cedillo had a disgruntled employee coming back to the mall where she'd been fired. Her boyfriend was telling lies about a job she didn't have. And a car that looked like hers had been spotted at the scene of a murder. Detective Pate still had David Mallory out in the parking lot and was looking for a reason to hold him.
He said that he had a driver's license, but he didn't have his driver's license with him.
Reason enough. He arrested Mallory and brought him in for questioning. But Carter seemed to have vanished, wasn't anywhere in the mall. But then police went to her apartment complex, and there she was.
Where was she in the apartment complex?
Well, she initially was in the laundry room.
Calm as you please, she agreed to answer questions without a lawyer down at the station.
Do you go by Carter or Carol?
Carter.
Somehow she'd switched her dark clothes for bright pink scrubs.
So how did you end up in Fort Worth?
I had a job opportunity with American Eagle Outfitters.
Oh yes, Carter's American Eagle connection. Detective Cedillo had already heard a thing or two about that. Carter had worked at the Fort Worth store for about 4 months and was businesslike. But unlike Ashley, she wasn't a very friendly assistant manager. She did, however, make an impression on some younger clerks, like Liza Schoenthal.
Carter was very smart, very deep. She was good at reading people and knowing how to converse with them. You could tell that she was well-educated. She just had a lot more to her than most sales retail managers do.
But Detective Cedillo knew something else about Carter and David Mallory. Something very important. Remember that burglary at American Eagle 3 months earlier? Carter and David Mallory were the primary suspects, and Ashley Harris was the one who discovered the money missing.
And when Ashley came in to open the store, she found the safe open.
Ashley knew it was Carter who closed the night before, and when she showed her boss the security video view of the burglary,
she pointed at the monitor and she said, "That's David Mallory." So I said, "Who's David Mallory?" And they said, "It's Carter's boyfriend."
The math was easy. Ashley figured Carter set up the burglary and David carried it out. Carter got fired. David sort of disappeared. And both heard that it was Ashley who identified them. They hadn't been charged, not yet. But
the case was basically actively being investigated when this happened.
And now, 3 months later, here was Carter talking to the police, who were growing suspicious that she and her boyfriend were connected to Ashley's murder.
Why am I here?
Well, the deal started off easy.
So were you raised in Amarillo or just...
No, I'm originally from Lubbock.
Is your family still there?
Yes.
Mom, dad, brothers, sisters? Or
what? I don't have any brothers, but I do have two sisters, and they all still live in Lubbock.
So have you seen your mom and dad in a while?
No. I talk to them every day on text message and Snapchat, but I haven't been home. And
more friendly questions.
And where did you go to school?
West Texas A&M University.
Cedillo asked about Thanksgiving. Small talk.
What did you make?
I made turkey, and there was stuffing and mashed potatoes and green bean casserole and this cabbage bacon salad that my mom really likes to make, but I don't think David liked it very much.
Except this wasn't really small talk. Detective Cedillo was paying close attention.
All right, so let's start with this morning.
Okay.
All right.
This morning.
Okay, what time do you get up?
About 7:30, okay. 7:45.
And then what happens then?
And then we talked, and I went back to sleep. And when I woke up, he wasn't there.
Okay.
He'd heard enough.
I know that's a lie.
No, it's not.
You know why I know it's a lie?
Why do you know it's
because
a lie?
Because I saw you come out of your apartment and get in the passenger seat of that car, and I saw him drive out of there. That's why I know it's a lie.
Cedillo was okay. Tough, your car was but Carter Cervantes wasn't giving an inch.
Coming up, if Carter's lies weren't reason enough for suspicion, this was.
She starts wiping down the bottle. She was afraid that we were going to obtain her DNA.
And what was this all about? And who was it for?
There's an actual human grave that's been dug.
Fresh grave.
Fresh grave.
When Dateline continues.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It was late Saturday morning, the day after Black Friday. 25-year-old Carter Cervantes was talking to detectives and lying through her teeth.
I know what I did this morning. I know where I was. I know where I went.
Detective Cedillo certainly knew where she went, the Hewlin Mall. But she kept insisting. She'd been at home all morning.
You're about to make the biggest mistake of your life. You understand me?
And she still wouldn't confess to it.
She wouldn't budge.
I got up, I went and put the laundry in, and I went and checked my email. That's all. You found me on my apartment complex.
Then, when the detective stepped out of the room, she did something interesting. Maybe incriminating?
She took a drink, puts the bottle down. She picks it up again, and before she can take the second drink, she stops midair, spills water on herself, puts the bottle down, and just stares at it for about 10 to 15 seconds. She then reaches over and grabs a tissue from the table and starts wiping down the bottle, and then wipes down the mouthpiece.
What did that say to you?
Well, that she was afraid that we were going to obtain her DNA from the bottle.
After that, police let her go. David Mallory, too. But detectives had a theory cooking that Carter and David killed Ashley out of revenge for being fired for the burglary. But they also wanted Ashley's keys to the American Eagle because they were planning to rob the store again. Those keys were the only thing missing from the murder scene. And when store manager Chris Cravey looked at his surveillance video from earlier that morning, he told police what they wanted to hear.
Describe what you saw on the videotape.
Somebody dressed in dark clothes with their face wrapped walk right up to the store and try to get in with keys.
That, he said, was Carter trying to pull off another bigger burglary. Police just knew. One day after killing Ashley and taking her keys, Carter was trying to break into American Eagle, where this time tens of thousands of dollars, the Black Friday profits, were in the safe. But the key didn't fit, because after Ashley was murdered, Chris Cravey changed the locks.
I wasn't going to take any chance on whether it be a deposit or them harming somebody else in the store. We needed to lock them out.
The detectives pulled the surveillance video. And look at this. Carter slipping away from the mall, having already changed from her sweat clothes into pink scrubs. Had to be trying to fool potential trackers, they thought. This was after she would have spotted police talking to David in the parking lot. And then she walked all the way home. Over the next few days, police got a warrant for Carter and David's cell phones. That camera app. So useful.
Well, we learned that they had conducted surveillance at Ashley's apartment weeks before that. They had a picture of her apartment, her actual door to her apartment, and they had pictures of her vehicle in the white Dodge Ram pickup.
In early December 2014, Carter Cervantes and David Mallory were arrested and charged with the murder of Ashley Harris. Cold comfort for Ashley's sister.
It's just such a loss, and it's so pointless. I just don't understand how people could do that.
They were tried separately, but the cases against them were virtually identical.
Do you recognize this disc?
Assistant DA Kevin Rousseau led the prosecution.
On State's Exhibit 1,
Ashley Diener assisted. From the witness stand, Detective Cedillo helped lay out the case.
Were you also able to conduct a search of her apartment and her vehicle and things like that?
Yes, sir.
And or did you find a receipt that proved to be helpful?
That's correct.
The sales receipt showed some odd purchases on Carter's credit card.
She had purchased two shovels. She had purchased a tarp. She had purchased gloves.
Why was that significant? Because of a discovery way out in the Texas scrub, a discovery worthy of a horror movie. And the key to finding it was right there on Carter and David's cell phones.
They would text each other longitude and latitude coordinates, and it led us to a remote area near Abilene.
What was there?
As soon as we got to where the spot says you're there, we look up and there's an actual human grave that's been dug.
Fresh grave.
Fresh grave.
Prosecutors believed the original plan was to kidnap Ashley, kill her, and put her body in that grave. She was killed in her apartment, the prosecutors thought, because she fought so hard.
What is that?
This is a Glock 19 semi-automatic pistol.
In fact, investigators believed Ashley Harris was pistol-whipped. So when this Glock 19 was found in the Black Infinity, Prosecutor Diener had it tested. The results were both sad and conclusive.
It came back positive with Ashley's DNA on the gun, so that was very significant.
There was blood adjacent to her bed and blood spatter on the bed. This was not an easy death.
Hearing all this was so hard on Ashley's mother, Monica, and loved ones like April.
I thought I could handle it. Mm-mm. Nope. So I went out and I went back into the room where Monica was, and she was consoling me, and she shouldn't be consoling me.
The brutality of the murder was never far from the prosecutor's minds.
I just thought how painful and how awful the last few minutes of her life would have been.
Terrifying.
And absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
States Exhibit 31.
But even that, they said, even that appeared to be part of the plan. This wasn't just about robbery or even revenge, said Prosecutor Rousseau.
It was discussions that Carter Cervantes had had with people where she expressed certain, I guess you can call them fantasies involving killing people.
Liza Schoenthal remembers one such discussion at work.
It was just us, and we were folding clothes, and she mentioned that she had thought about killing someone before and whether or not she could watch them dying.
As if the murder wasn't shocking enough, prosecutors were pretty sure Ashley's murder was a thrill kill, planned by a sadistic young woman who thought she was smarter than everyone else. But tiny, meek Carter Cervantes admitted none of that. She still had a plan, concocted all by herself, to explain why she, too, was a victim.
Coming up, a vicious killer?
You wanted to see the death penalty.
Death penalty was what I wanted.
Or a young woman forced into a life of crime.
Were you in pain?
Yeah. I was screaming.
When people talk about the trial of Carter Cervantes, this is what they remember.
Say your name for the record, please.
My name is Carter Carol Cervantes.
Against the advice of her attorneys, Carter Cervantes took the stand. Gone was that criminal mastermind. Here sat a helpless victim.
She gets up on the stand, and it was insane.
Carter said it was all her boyfriend, David Mallory, controlling every aspect of her life.
I was very afraid of David.
How afraid of him were you?
I thought he was going to kill me.
This is where Carter's defense truly began. She told the jury she was a woman enslaved by her sadistic lover.
He was telling me what to drink, what to eat, and he made me have sex with him in the movie theater.
And he had that gun, the Glock, she said, used it like a threat, and it scared her.
I did not feel comfortable with that weapon.
She told the jury she was asleep at home when Ashley was being murdered. She didn't know where David had gone. But somehow he wound up with a set of American Eagle keys.
Gave me some gloves, told me to put them on, and then he handed me a set of American Eagle keys. And he said, go in and open the gate. Bring me that fat-ass deposit.
And then, she said, he pulled out the Glock.
And he just pointed it at me.
Pointed it at you?
Yes, across his body. I shook my head, but I wasn't going to do it. And he said, you don't understand. There's somebody sitting outside your parents' house right now. If you don't go in, I'm going to kill them, and then I'm going to kill you.
So that's why she tried to rob the store, she said. It was that or be killed. Just a couple of hours before she showed up on the security video, she said. David made it very clear to her just how far he would go to make sure, absolutely sure, that she would do what he demanded.
Somebody pushed me down right when I got into the apartment.
During the night, before the break-in attempt, she said, David brought strange men into their apartment. She heard an angry voice above her.
He said, I'll make her follow directions.
And then her story got even more harrowing.
They took off my sweatpants and pulled them down to my ankles. And they raped me.
Raped twice, she said, sobbing, by two different men.
Were you in pain?
I was screaming.
Prosecutors Kevin Rousseau and Ashley Diener seemed as taken aback as the rest of the courtroom.
I know what I think. This is not true.
And they needed to regroup fast.
This is the biggest lie she's ever told. We know that, but you never know what the jury's thinking.
Carter had an explanation for just about everything. Even that moment during her interrogation when she wiped the bottle. She wasn't wiping off her DNA. No. She said the smell from the bottle reminded her of being raped.
And I was telling myself, it's just water. It's just water. It's not them. But I could still smell it.
She said that she suddenly was overcome with the smell of semen in the air. And it had something to do with drinking out of this bottle of water. And I thought, now that took some work. That is one heck of a lie.
And it was at that point that I put my pen down mm-hmm. and said, I am not writing this. I am not going to write this down.
His voice dripping with sarcasm, Prosecutor Russo took her story apart. He showed the jury a picture.
Is that the gun that you're talking about that you were very uncomfortable with being in your apartment?
Yes.
That's the one that's laying there beside you while you're having your morning coffee?
Yes.
And then he drilled down into the heart of Carter's story. Just who were those mysterious rapists?
They all spoke in a way that I would describe as ghetto lines.
Okay. So, in your mind, these are black men?
No, sir. I did not say that.
But, said the prosecutor, that's exactly what she was suggesting.
If she was going to try to play that card, I was going to make her spell it out.
Is demonics a term that is commonly associated with African Americans in this country?
I don't know where demonics is commonly associated with. I associate it with a certain type of speech that I also associate with the word ghetto.
But if she was hoping to play to some random juror's racial bias, she guessed wrong. The jurors didn't believe it. Not for a second. They found her guilty in less than 2 hours. As for David Mallory, his attorneys argued he had nothing to do with the murder. He was involved with Carter, yes, but not with any killing. The jury didn't buy that either, rendering a guilty verdict in no time at all. The verdicts were some consolation for those who loved Ashley Harris.
I still miss her. She saw the best in everybody. Even when you couldn't see it, she could see it. She had such a big heart. And this world is worse off. At least mine is.
Both David Mallory and Carter Cervantes received mandatory sentences of life in prison, with no possibility of parole. It wasn't enough for Ashley's mom and stepdad.
You wanted to see the death penalty.
Death penalty was what I wanted. It's what Monica wanted. But it wasn't to be.
And now they cling to memories of their Ashley.
Tell me about the last time you saw your daughter. Physically, in person.
It was November.
May 14.
About a week before she died, Ashley had invited Monica to play bingo. Monica was busy, almost said no, but something told her to stop what she was doing and go. And oh, is she glad she did.
And I walk into the bingo hall, and oh my God, there sat that little girl of mine. And I smile at her, and I walk over, and I kiss the side of her neck, and I tell her how much I love her.
You remember every syllable, every moment of that day, don't you?
Yes.
G56.
These days, Monica is making new memories at the bingo parlor. Remember how skittish she was around Ashley's girlfriends at first? No longer. Now, they're family.
Have a good weekend.
When Monica and I go and get our nails done, they always say, oh, your daughter's so pretty. She never corrects them. As far as she's concerned, she gained several daughters.
And when they're all together, Ashley is there too.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, He created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.